Okay, I'm calling this meeting to order. My apologies that it's starting a little bit late to all, especially the many folks who are here. We have got, I guess we'll start by having the clerk take the roll.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Present.
Representative Katisa Watoon, Vice Chair.
Present.
Representative Franson. Representative Bonner.
Present.
Representative Damuth.
Present.
Representative Heinzman. Representative Morrison.
Present.
Representative Pryor.
Present.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Present.
Representative West.
Okay, and then we do have a quorum, so if I can have a motion to approve the minutes of our meeting on February 18th.
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Wasilewicz. Any discussion on the motion to approve those minutes? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we've had the minutes approved. We have Representative Katisa Watoon up at the testifiers table, and Representative, you have an author's amendment to the bill. I wonder if you'd like to have Ms. Mock just explain what's in that, or if Representative, you'd like to do that.
Yes. Yep. I will.
Okay.
Move the amendment, but then let Ms. Mock speak to it. Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to have Ms. Mock do it. Okay. So Ms. Mock, if you can just let us know what's in the A5.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representatives. So we're looking at the A5 amendment, and the first lines 1.3 through 1.6 are a change to Article 1, Section 1, the Home Visiting Program. And the change is that any grants awarded on or after July 1st, 2020 will be awarded according to the new statutory language, which is in the DE5. So that provides that those grants will be for both evidence-based and evidence-informed grants rather than just evidence-based programs only. The second change is for Article 2, Section 3, which amends the kindergarten readiness assessment language, and it removes a word that's obsolete, representative, given that the DE5 makes the assessment required for all incoming kindergartners. The third change is to Article 2, Section 5, which amends program eligibility for the early learning scholarships. And it provides that the requirement to have a 3 or 4 star rating goes into effect at such time when 40% of the programs eligible to be rated have received ratings. So rather than going into effect July 1st, 2022, it'll go into effect when 40% of programs have received a rating. The fourth change is to Article 3, Section 1. Which removes the effective date for the changes to the CCAP rate. So that's going to the statewide rate and going to the most recent market rate survey. So instead of an effective date of September 30th, 2020, that section will become effective July 1st, 2020. The fifth change is for Article 3, Section 10, which amends the language appropriating money for child care grants to clarify that the grants can be used for direct subsidies for child care business employees. The sixth change is also to Article 3, Section 10, and it's just a technical change to make up for my clumsy fingers. And the seventh change is also Article 3, Section 10, and it amends the appropriation to the Minnesota Initiative Foundation to remove a component of a requirement regarding how the Minnesota Initiative Foundation can use its grant funds.
Thank you, Ms. Mock. As I review these, they seem largely clean up. It seems like the one exception is the one to page 8, line 22, that just makes the adjustment for when programs with 3 and 4 stars are required are only eligible for scholarships. And I recall Ms. Cunningham mentioning that in her testimony the other day with that proposal. Anything further you want to add about the amendment, Representative Katisa Watoon? Okay. Any questions then anybody has about the amendment? Okay, so then all in favor of approving the author's amendment, the A5, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. So that has been added to the bill. There are no further amendments, and so any discussion to the bill or questions for the bill's author? Oh, Representative Heinzman is nodding, I think. Yes? Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Well, we'll have Representative Wasilewicz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, I think this came up in discussion maybe Tuesday evening, but I'm wondering if there could be maybe some clarification around the single rate that we've talked about. I think that would be good to have some background on that if someone could provide that.
Certainly. Anything, either Representative Cadiz or Witun, if there's anything that you want to say preliminarily about that, or if there's anyone in position who can talk about that. I can talk about that briefly as well, but Representative Cadiz or Witun, do you want to perhaps start?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Essentially, right, currently there's two separate rates, one for kind of the metro area, one for greater Minnesota, based on cost of living, a variety of different things. And the costs of running a childcare business are largely the same across the state. But of course, when we adjust the reimbursement rate for providers in greater Minnesota, that's to a lower cost of living level, they're not getting basically as much money as they should be getting, given that it costs almost the same to run a business in that area.
And this is, Representative Wasilewicz, this is used in a number of other states, including New Mexico, but I know some other states as well. And so, you know, right now the rates are set on a survey that's geographically based, as Representative Witun mentioned. And so the thought is because costs, and they do vary family versus center-based, et cetera, because costs don't vary as much as rates do, then the thought is that this is a way to make sure that businesses, I mean, we know that all these businesses are not being supported nearly enough based on the economics, but this at least makes that more equal. I should note that this is quite a greater Minnesota-friendly proposal that comes out of this. So anything further, any questions on that? Okay. Any further, anybody? Okay, as for now, okay. So then I think Representative Heintzman, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
So I'm going to start with a constituent question that I received. In Crow Wing County, in the last decade, we've lost half of our providers, or half of our capacity would be the more accurate way to state that. And they asked me if today's bill had any regulatory reductions or other functions for those providers that found the system to be so complex and so frustrating as time has gone on that they left the child care industry. That might not be the best way to put that, but it is on one way or another a business. Can you show me any regulatory reduction in the bill? I read it. I couldn't find any, so I'm wondering.
Sure.
Representative Cadiz Witun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Heintzman, for that question. Are you speaking specifically to one of the programs, scholarships, child care assistance, or just in general regulatory reform?
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I think the constituent was very specifically wondering if there were any provisions in this bill. Does House File 1 under the DE have any language that would make it easier for them to re-enter that business? And it was the regulatory frustrations and concerns that led them to leave the business in the first place. And I know that's something that the entire legislature has heard over the last, well, decade. And I'm wondering if this bill addresses that issue.
Representative Cadiz Witun.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. We haven't addressed a lot of regulatory changes in this bill, but we have included some of the recommendations from the Child Care Task Force. So in Section 10, the Family Child Care Regulation Modernization area, it does speak to a couple of the recommendations based on the meetings of that task force throughout the interim and
last session. I wonder, Representative Heintzman, if it would make sense to have the co-chair of the task force who worked on this section to perhaps answer your question, which is Representative Wasilewicz.
Honestly, Mr. Chair, I was hoping that the bill author could tell me where in the bill is there anything that would reduce regulatory requirements that would help people who left the industry return to the industry again.
And Representative Heintzman, I think the answer to your question is Section 10, so page 11 of the bill, which is a Family Child Care Regulation Modernization. And this is coming out of the Family Child Care Task Force, where they heard loud and clear and had representatives of Family Child Care and others who said, what we need is this, and then we're funding it. And then the bill is funding it. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would be fine. We could talk about what the group did in their efforts, but I'd really like to know, where in the bill, is there any language in the bill that addresses this issue? The task force we could discuss probably for quite some time and what their findings might have been, but is there anything in the bill that addresses this issue specifically relative to regulatory requirements that have caused so many folks to leave the child care industry?
So, Representative Heintzman, so line 11.10 of the bill requires the Commissioner of Human Services to contract with an independent organization or individual consultant develop a proposal for ... And I guess it sounds like that you don't view that as addressing the concern, but I think that it's squarely addressed at at addressing those regulatory concerns. Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think anybody watching today or listening would be asking a similar question if they were reading the bill. If there is any regulatory changes that had been recommended or the agency had found productive, I think that should be in here specifically. I don't see that there's any outcome necessarily written there, but I'll move on to my next question. It sounds like the answer is no, that's not in the bill. If we could go to Article 3, line 17.20. There's some programming here that I was wondering about. We're talking about forgivable loans or grants, and I think the Section 6 is talking about a $3.5 million appropriation. Line 17.20, establishing a fund to provide for forgivable loans or grants to match all or part of a loan made under this section. Representative Rakiza-Watun, if you could help me understand the criteria for how we're deciding whether or not we're going to forgive a loan, and then also are we talking about a small portion of money that would be used towards this section of the language, or are we talking about the entire $3.5 million appropriation, if I've understood the appropriation correctly? Maybe you could help me out.
Representative Khatiza-Witun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the $3.5 million appropriation goes to First Children's Finance. They've been running successful child care programming all across the state for a number of years, and I believe this is a piece of their program that they are able to work with providers as necessary, and sometimes businesses fail. I mean, and we know this, so they want to be able to not necessarily require a complete payback, as I understand it, from the child care businesses that don't make it.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I don't see any criteria here as to how we're deciding whose loans we forgive or don't forgive. So just so I'm understanding perfectly clear, are you saying any of the businesses that potentially fail who have received a portion of that $3.5 million, are you saying that any of those businesses then would potentially qualify to have that loan forgiven if they fail?
Representative Khatiza-Witun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Heisman. I guess in 17.24 and following, where it says First Children's Finance must establish the terms and conditions for loans and loan guarantees, including interest rates, repayment agreements, et cetera, we're allowing them to make those determinations. And if you think that we need additional clarification when it comes to specifically the forgivable loans or grants, going forward, we can certainly ask that of them and see if we can include that in the bill, potentially.
And just a reminder, they have to make a report back to the legislature down at line 17.30. But Representative Heisman.
No, I appreciate that, and I will continue to have questions, and maybe the agency could get back and explain maybe what that criteria there. Maybe they have it already written. Maybe they're just going to be establishing that. Either way, that's a real question mark for me. I'm not clear on why that would make sense. The other question that I had, Representative, was we've had House File 1 in the possession of this committee, I think, since last January, so well over a year. And this is a finance committee. And I'm wondering at what point we could hope to see a fiscal note.
Representative Khatiza-Witun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Heisman. We did begin House File 1 in this committee last year. We heard it in committee. Our division report included pieces of House File 1, so it did go forward and beyond to the Education Finance Committee as well as Health and Human Services Finance last year. This delete all amendment has been requested a fiscal note, and so as we head to Health and Human Services Finance, I anticipate that we'll be seeing that fiscal note soon in the next week or so, hopefully.
And I may note, Representative Heisman, just, you know, of course, there's specific amounts in the bill, so, I mean, it's $500 million, right? I mean, it's got the spreadsheet. So, I mean, we'll get a formal fiscal note back. It has been requested. But the amounts are sort of with each of these sections, it's, you know, do this, and then there's a specific amount of money specified. So we would expect it's going to be the $500 million that actually says it's in the bill. But Representative Hodgson.
No, here again, thank you, Mr. Chair. Like I said, this is a finance committee, and typically we see fiscal notes for bills. And we had House File 1 for a long time, and we never had a fiscal note relative to the spending and the expenditures in that language. And now we're looking at spending approximately, I guess, $500 million, and we still don't have a fiscal note relative to this. So my next question, Representative, would be, so I'm also seeing that this is all, that entire proposed spending is all one-time money. Why not make a more permanent funding mechanism? So we're setting up all kinds of structure and setting up all these systems, and it's literally a very short window, up to 2 years, I think, if I'm reading some of the language correctly. Why? Why only 2 years?
Representative Katiza Batun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Heintzman. We, simply put, we have this money to spend now, and we are feeling that it doesn't make a lot of sense just because we cannot promise that this money will be ongoing, that we don't support the children and families who need it now. So some of the funding will continue on, and we are really looking at this as a down payment, and hopefully when we get into next session and have potentially some additional continuing funding, we would be able to revisit some of the pieces in this bill and hopefully continue supporting our children and families where they need it the most.
If you do favor permanent ongoing funding, I'm sure Representative Katiza Watun would gladly have that support. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the comment. I think that anybody watching here again or listening is going to have similar questions, and I don't know that it makes any sense. If you have the opportunity to write the language and you think that these programs really deserve the credit that we apparently are giving them, you're writing the bill. You're the bill author, Representative. You can write in funding on into the future, but you're choosing not to do that, and I think that that should raise a lot of question marks for Minnesotans as they wonder what is happening here in St. Paul and what the DFL's priorities are relative to this language.
Thank you. Representative Wasilewicz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to address some of the questions that Representative Heintzman raised earlier about regulatory reform. And one of the things that the Child Care Task Force is actually doing is putting out a survey to providers who have gone out of business to understand more specifically what sort of regulations caused difficulty for them and may have caused them to go out of business. So up to this point, we don't have anything specific on specific regulations within the rule and statute that govern family child care. And so we're trying to get a better idea of kind of specific regulations that folks think caused barriers or caused them to close their business. And then from there, I think we're supposed to have results sometime during session from that survey. And then from there, can think about some legislative proposals, but just not. The timeline doesn't work out for us to have anything this session, but certainly to kind of continue the discussion around what sort of regulations, what are providers telling us about regulations and things that need to be changed, and then how can we move forward with that information. So that is being done. We are getting more specifics on that, but just wasn't done in a fast enough way for us to be able to have some legislation at this point.
Thank you, Representative Wasilewicz. Representative Franson.
Mr. Chair. Anyway, to the point of Representative Katiza Watim, on the yet another survey, my friends, we have been doing this for years and years. We have done tours around the state, many tours around the state. We've all had listening sessions in our district. We've spoken to child care providers. They have testified in front of our committees, and yet now we're hearing another survey. Mr. Chair, sometimes I wonder if the state of Minnesota really truly cares about child care providers and we're just patting them on the head, saying we're listening to you, we're trying to figure this out, patting. Meanwhile, we're continuing to push toward all-day pre-K, universal pre-K, or we already have all-day, but universal pre-K while we are, the state of Minnesota is destroying the private market. And, you know, childcare providers want to know today, now, not tomorrow or 2, 3, 4 years from now, that we're actually taking their profession seriously. And I'm frustrated, as well as business owners who can't find people to work, those moms and dads who are unable to find quality care, for the providers themselves who are screaming for some help here because they're just regulated to death, but yet they're saying, you guys aren't listening. We've already talked about this many, many, many times over and over and years and years and years.
Other other comments or questions for the bill's author? Representative Damuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, thank you for bringing this bill forward. My question has to do with the voluntary pre-K and the four-star rating. So if you can tell me how many site visits or inspections are required for the four-star rating, how does that, as described under Chapter 124D, how does that happen and how long? What's the process, I guess?
Representative Katiza Witoon. If you need a phone a friend, I'm not sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So our four-star rating programs, I mean, they qualify four-year-old kindergartens typically are a part of the school district, and so they tend to hit those benchmarks through other qualification processes. So if anyone else would like to speak to particularly the number of site visits, that would be good.
And we've got Ms. Snyder from the Department of Education. Thank you for coming up. Would you identify yourself and then proceed?
Kaylin Snyder, Minnesota Department of Education. Mr. Chair, Representative Damuth, I have this information in my inbox, but was not able to pull it up as quickly as I was hoping, but I can provide that to the committee.
And I believe this is existing law, if I'm understanding the question correctly, and that there's no change in that. Correct. Okay. Thank you. A follow-up, Representative Damon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sure. Another thing just going with that, and I would appreciate that information, too, if you can get that to the committee. Representative, how long does it take from a program actually opening then? And this is part of the same question. I don't know if Ms. Snyder will be able to provide that or if you know, but from when a program actually opens in that setting and when they apply until they can actually open, do you know the process in there, or is it just kind of an automatic for the four-star?
Representative Katiza Witoon, and I think maybe the question is referring to voluntary pre-K programs.
Yep, still the same thing. So when they open, is it an automatic that they get the four-star, or is there a process
parents can know? Mr. Chair, I cannot speak directly to the timeline from when a four-year-old preschool program would open, especially in the voluntary pre-K program. But it is an existing program, and we're just looking to extend the opportunity for 4,000 children to attend four-year-old kindergarten.
I guess to clarify, because this is not adding any new children in voluntary pre-K, it's existing programs, just to be sure. But Representative Damuth.
That's it. Thank you.
That's it. Okay. Other questions or comments anybody has? Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mostly, it's a comment. I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for your years of leadership on this issue, and Representative Katiza Witoon for her leadership in carrying this bill, and the many stakeholders who have worked tirelessly on these issues to enact and enhance a lot of what's included in House File 1. We've known a long time about the importance of the first years of life, and to finally see it prioritized in this bill is a very exciting and hopeful statement, I think, about the future of our kids and the future of our state. So really just a thank you.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. Anything else from members? Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, the author, Representative Katiza Witoon. We talked about constituents this morning, so I went to a program a couple weeks back, mm-hmm. and actually our chair was on the panel discussing it. And it was done, it's a preschool, it's actually in Plymouth, and they're in the Wayzata School District as they graduate the program. But they've been around for decades, and they have part of their mission, it's based at a church, part of their mission is to serve people that basically can't afford childcare. because they want to work, but we know that the economics of it doesn't work. You know, that you only one adult can take care of only so many children. And we're not talking, and so when we talk about regulation, that's the regulation that that we can't as a state take away. Because, you know, in a family, they do get spaced out unless you have the triplets, and we know that happens, and if you had another kid, and then you need help. So one adult can only take care of so many children, and that's, you know, and that's what this child care facility has been working with and struggling with, and they get, you know, they get state money for scholarships, and they use the child care assistance program, and then they use private funds to keep pouring into this program to sustain it and to keep providing high quality child care to the neediest, as well as the other kids in the community that also need child care, the middle class families. And they heard about this bill, and one of my constituents is on the board, and he said, you know, they were so excited to know what we were doing, because they know on the ground this is going to matter to children's lives, and they know that kids can't wait. We also know that we have a budget that we have to meet, and we have one-time money. We do not have this as ongoing money right now in the budget, because this is not our budget year. So we can't take money from other things that we funded to make this ongoing. So we're trying to be realistic in what we're doing, but we also know one-year-olds can't wait. There is brain development that's going on right now, and if these one-year-olds do not get that quality child care setting that their parents need for them, their brains will not be able to develop in the way that, and they won't be nurtured in the way that is that will give them their potential in life. And if that one-year-old is not given that quality education, that quality experience, they will always have to be coping with what they missed. And when we see them in our pre-K programs, when we see them in kindergarten, we're having to make up for what they missed when they were 1 year old. And so the difference between what it would cost to take care of a one-year old the way that they should be taken care of to what it will cost if we don't realize that opportunity, if we don't fund that opportunity, we will be paying for public dollars, taxpayer dollars, we will be paying for the rest of their career in education. And then we will be paying for that, they will be paying for it in the rest of their careers in the workforce. So that's when we talk about the investment now is the cheapest we can do as taxpayers, as representatives, as stewards of state taxpayer money. This is the best investment. What we have available right now is one-time dollars. Those one-time dollars will have an impact for the next, you know, as long as these children are alive. So think of that one-year-old, and that's who we're helping right now. And we're helping their parents get in the workforce, stay in the workforce, be stable, get their lives together so that we don't have to support them anymore. This is the best we can do, and this is what we have to do. And this bill, House File 1, you are the person to carry it. And so thank you. Your life, your experience just speaks to this in a way that that we can all appreciate. So thank you, Representative Carly Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative Carly Katiza Watun. I just want to say thank you so much for bringing the bill forward, and I know that a lot of time and effort did actually go into creating this bill. There was a great deal of thought about how we balance the needs of different folks, different competing priorities in terms of additional funding for things like CCAP dollars versus scholarship dollars. and how that would play out. There's a lot of thought put into that and making sure that we're really being thoughtful about how we make those investments for different parts of our state. And I can tell you, I had the privilege of being able to attend, for example, home visit, as I believe Representative Wasilewicz did. And I have to tell you, during that visit, seeing a young Latino family, and they had 2 4-year-old twins, and watching them in action, seeing the engagement from their mother, seeing the folks involved, their level of engagement and their passion with these kids were they thought they were playing while she was evaluating them. And she was so smooth and so effortless. And to see these kids excited, to be excited about learning, was really incredible. And I think that this is a family, in all fairness, that might not have always had this opportunity to get that good start in life. But I can see that that level of parent-child engagement was just phenomenal. And it was really fantastic. And I think, you know, when I talk to folks in my own community about how we do more, we know, we've heard tons of testimony, which we won't go into today, but the reality is we know that these first early years, we're developing these little minds, these incredible little sponges that have so much potential. And while you're right, we would love to work with our friends on the other side of the aisle, and if we have the budget dollars to continue this, we would love to continue and to make these dollars permanent. But the reality is that these kids, as Representative Pryor mentioned, they're only young once. Those little developing minds only get one shot. And so anything that we can do to add to that and give a few more children that opportunity to really succeed in life, to be successful, to lead healthy, happy lives, to love education, I think those are all extremely admirable goals. And even if we can't save them all, we're going to do our darndest to save as many as we can. And I think that's important. And I think the people of Minnesota appreciate that. And I know the folks in my community do. So I am actually really proud of this piece of legislation. And I hope that down the road we will be able to work with Representative Heintzman, Representative Damuth, and the chair to actually find ways to extend this financing into the budget so that we can make those critical investments when we get the best return on investment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel like I have to talk now that we've gone around the whole entire table. But yesterday we heard some testimony that 4-year-olds are being cut out of the early learning scholarship. So why are you cutting 4-year-olds out of the scholarship program?
Representative Katiza, what are you doing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your comment, Representative West. I wouldn't go so far to say that we're cutting 4-year-olds out of the program, but we did, given the research that we've seen throughout last session and in the interim, we really just want to redirect funding to the children in the years and when they need it the most. So there are a multitude of options for 4-year-olds. As they grow, some of those, the brain development that's happening, though, between the ages of 0 to 3 is so critical. We just want to make sure that families have every opportunity to find the programming that is essential for their children at those points in time. And again, if funding were unlimited, you know, we wouldn't have to make some of these tough decisions.
And to clarify, Representative West, a child who has a scholarship at age 3 does keep it at age 4, among other exceptions for 4-year-olds. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. But the concern here is, with early learning scholarships, the parents have choice and a lot more flexibility, and that's the beauty of the program. So having them not be able to, you can expand it, you know, getting more funds to earlier years, you know, I can get behind that, but narrowing funds for the best program that I hear about from people from my district for where they can go, I don't think is a good idea.
Okay. Thank you, Representative West. Okay, Representative Katiza Watoon, we're going to give you the last word, but first I'm going to get the second to last word. Just because I want to note that we This is going to be an ongoing debate, I know, in future committees and on the House floor to discuss this. I just want to make sure to acknowledge that we are in the middle, as Representative Pryor said, we're in the middle of our budget cycle. And we're in a position now where our choices with the funds we have available are that we could not invest at all. And what I'm not hearing from anybody, as I don't think somebody could say this, is that our childcare economics are working well, that in fact there's not a need, that there's not a need to increase payment to providers, not a need to support parents and have the rates that are paid go down, and not a need to support early learning in various ways. So it seems like not investing at all is not an option. As with other folks, I'd be delighted in the future when we are able to write a two-year budget to get the support of our friends on both sides of the aisle to continue. But in the meantime, what we know, as has been said, is that we have an opportunity with funds that are available to make a difference in a child's life and, in fact, in many children's lives. And we know just common sense and just our just to each of us personally, that when you make that difference in a child's life, that can pay off for a long, long, long time to come. So if the concern regarding sort of being responsible about this is the thought that we should be spending more on this in future years, my goodness, I will be delighted to have that discussion and to have the support in doing that. I will also note Ms. Snyder from the Department of Education, I gather, has already sent to all of us the information that was requested by, I think it was Representative Damas, so just we have that. Representative Katiza-Watoon, and I'll just, oh my goodness. So then we're going to have Representative Franson speak, and then Representative Katiza-Watoon. Representative Franson, my apologies.
Didn't realize that you were on the list. I'm easily forgettable.
Didn't realize you were on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1 was introduced on January 10th, 2019, heard in this division on March 7th, 2019, and again this week. In more than a year, no fiscal note has been produced or provided for this bill as introduced. The DFL leadership promised honest proposals, promoting the values of the majority caucus. But when you cannot even estimate the costs of your own proposals, that, my friends, is not very honest. And House File 1, as amended by the DE5, lacks the honesty our constituents deserve. This bill is framed as a down payment with no promise or plan to follow up with additional funding next year to maintain the large increases in the provider rates, eliminating the CCAP waiting list, or sustaining the growth in the early learning scholarships. The only promise of additional long-term funding is to the teachers union with a permanent extension of funding for the voluntary pre-kindergarten program. That is your number one priority. The special interests, not the children or the parents who will be teased by this one-time funding. But let's be honest. This bill is largely a gimmick to give the appearance of taking the issue of early learning and childcare seriously. The $190 million in one-time funding for CCAP is mainly for a one-year provider rate increase. That is a dangerous bait and switch unless the 2021 legislature votes to fully fund this one-time increase set by the commissioner, or providers will see a dramatic rate cut. That's unfair. The providers already suffer from low pay, but don't add insult to injury with the illusion of dramatic funding increases that are not sustainable. There was an opportunity for bipartisan support for the early learning scholarships that are targeted based on need and free of the rampant fraud found within the CCAP program. However, that opportunity is being squandered by redesigning the program and opening a giant loophole to funnel four-year-olds into voluntary or universal pre-K regardless of need. The opportunity is being squandered in raising a false hope to the sincere advocates with $190 million in one-time funding with no guarantee those funds will be spent in the fiscal year. This money will be dropped into a special revenue account that is not constitutionally protected, and when it remains unspent, could serve as nothing more than a political piggy bank for the 2021 legislature. There are also opportunities for bipartisan agreement on the retain grants and teach grants and other targeted programs that promote parent choice and empower providers with one-time gimmicks. There could be bipartisan support for real regulatory reform and more anti-fraud measures to help restore confidence in a program served, for the most part, by honest, hardworking providers serving honest, hardworking parents. Instead, you are dumping $190 million into a program that remains riddled with fraud, expressing confidence in a reform effort based on a single flowchart. Just last week, we heard testimony regarding dozens of active investigations, provider authorizations being terminated, providers being closed, and providers being administratively disqualified, criminal convictions, and more than $600,000 in recovered overpayments. And yet, we still don't have a permanent inspector general in charge at the Office of Inspector General. We have an OIG with no IG, my friends. With that, Mr. Chair, I have serious doubts, concerns, and objections to this bill, and therefore I move that House File 1, as amended, be tabled. The February forecast will be released next week, and we will learn exactly how much money we have to work with. The Commissioner has not yet made a permanent Inspector General to justify this newfound confidence in program integrity, and we are delaying in the committee deadlines, giving us another week for this bill to work its way through the process. So I urge members, support the motion to table, and let's do this bill right.
Okay, so there is a motion to table that is now on the table. Any discussion to the motion? All right, I would simply urge members to vote against and keep things and keep the bill moving. And there we go. So, all in favor of the motion to table, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed to the motion to table, say no.
Nay.
No. Okay, and that motion fails. Okay, so Representative Katiza Witun, then you get the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, everyone, for your participation and suggestions today. We have many committee stops ahead of us in additional finance committees, so I'm confident that you'll see that fiscal note that you're so impatient for. And I look forward to it as well, given what Mr. Chair's statement was, that everything is tied to a specific monetary amount in the Delete All Amendment of House File 1. I am guessing that it's going to come in right around $500 million. So going forward, I would love the bipartisan support that we're talking of, that we're seeking of. We brought so many variety of stakeholders to the table in consideration in creation of this bill. We equalized the funding for scholarships and child care assistance. So, like I said on Tuesday morning, there is no one piece of legislation that's going to make everyone happy, and that is sort of the business of politics that we're in. But we can make incremental change for everyone that needs it, and I think that this bill does a really good job of that. Few providers would express that they go into child care for the money. I think we can all agree upon that. And when this bill is helping providers who accept child care assistance dollars with the increases in the reimbursement rate, specifically with a shout out to our friends in Greater Minnesota with that one rate across the state, making sure that they get some additional funding where they need it the most. I think that that's making sure that we bring our providers on board. When we look at the research that shows states who have a very, very different regulatory climate than we do here in Minnesota, for example, Wisconsin, there's one graph in particular that I'm recalling from last year, that the lines of Minnesota and Wisconsin go down literally in parallel. Their regulation doesn't match what we have here, but yet they're still seeing providers close their doors daily, weekly, whatever it may be. This is a nationwide crisis. I'm not saying that this bill is the end-all, be-all. It is a down payment. I want to make additional funding for our youngest children. I think it's hard for me to stomach that my friends across the aisle would question the DFL's commitment to our youngest Minnesotans and their families when not one of them will sign on to this bill and support it in any shape or form. So this is not a promise to the teachers union. This is a promise to our communities and to the youngest Minnesotans and their families. So we are including everyone at the table here. I appreciate the feedback. We've got a lot of stops to make along the way, and I think that we can be confident that this bill is going to make a big difference in the lives of children who are only young once. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Cotizza-Witun, and thank you, members, for the discussion. So with that, Representative Cotizza-Witun renews her motion that House File 1, as amended, be re-referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Division. And so all in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And any opposed say no.
No.
Okay. So with that, the motion prevails, and House File 1 is re-referred to Health and Human Services Finance Division. Members, next Tuesday, the plan is to receive a presentation from the administration regarding the Children's Cabinet and the Preschool Development Grant, and then we'll proceed from there, and then be hearing some bills on Thursday, and we'll get the information out about that. Members, thank you very much again. Thanks to Representative Cotizza-Witun for her work on the bill. With that, we are adjourned.